Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Last month, we aired an interview with Pat Roy, the creator of the Jonathan Park Adventure Series, who is now working with a California public school outreach called Genesis Apologetics, making dramatic YouTube videos. Not that I'm calling them dramatic, but they are dramas, dramatized, including high school classroom videos. If you know kids that go to public school, or perhaps to a liberal pro-evolution private school, you'll want to share with them this link, debunkevolution.com. That's put on by Genesis Apologetics. It's so easy, just debunkevolution.com. A few weeks back, I attended a webinar presented by two creation leaders, Eric Hovind, who's been on the show this past year, and the president of Genesis Apologetics, who is Dr. Dan Biddle. That's B-I-D-D-L-E, Dr. Dan Biddle. Well, Dan presented the results of a survey of hundreds of students asking what creation evolution topics would be most persuasive to them to debunk evolution, perhaps evidence regarding the age of the earth, or DNA, or dinosaurs, or human evolution. By a significant margin, the students selected human evolution as the leading so-called evidence that is used to support evolution. So to follow up on that, we've arranged to interview the president of Genesis Apologetics, Dr. Dan Biddle, about Lucy, the little Australopithecine creature that so many kids are taught evolved into human beings. So, Dr. Biddle, welcome to Real Science Radio.
Thanks for having me on, Bob. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, what an honor. I viewed your video, Did Humans Evolve? That's lesson 3A in your video curriculum. What a great video. In fact, the whole series is fabulous. Thanks for producing this.
Absolutely. We have a strong burden for, especially for public school kids, but we also reach out to kids that go to private school and homeschool Christians, because there's a huge onslaught of evolution teaching that's happening in the public school system today, and kids are drowning in it, and a lot of them are losing their faith because of it. So we came out with that series to put a stop to as much of it as we could.
Yeah. On the homepage of GenesisApologetics.com, you list quite a few, and you show the covers of the public school biology texts. In fact, you have quite a few textbooks listed there. Do some of those actually state that Lucy evolved into Homo sapien?
Well, you know, the textbooks that we have on our website are, in fact, representative of the textbooks that are used nationwide, but we specifically focused in on the textbooks in California. But evolution teaching starts in sixth grade, where kids, at least in California, get a solid 2 weeks of teaching on human evolution that indeed does start with Lucy. They believe that Lucy emerged between 3 and 4 million years ago, and then she eventually led to Homo habilis, and then Homo erectus, and then finally Homo sapien. So it's taught as fact in California schools for about 2 solid weeks in sixth grade. Mm.
So going through your video and your website, I know that you guys are prepared to talk to kids about Lucy. So Dan, could you talk through with me and our audience, what is the scientific evidence that challenges the claim that Lucy evolved into Homo sapiens?
You know, it's interesting. Lucy's been out for over 40 years now and in the textbooks for most of that time. And so what we've done is we scoured really the evolutionary scientific journals and have found that evolutionists themselves have debunked Lucy as one of our early human ancestors. So And of course, creationists like ourselves are able to take a lot of that information and write books and everything about it. But we like leaning on the evolutionary journals themselves. And what we've done is identified the 10 fatal flaws that prove Lucy could not have been one of our early human ancestors.
So, yeah, let's talk through those, because this is so fascinating, because the claim is that Lucy obviously walked upright. That would mean that she evolved into us. But
yes,
there is a lot of evidence from her skeleton that indicates otherwise.
Yes, we like to look at Lucy and talk about the fact that she's not a human ancestor by using what we call the 10 fatal flaws about Lucy, and we start from her head and go down to her toe. The first thing, just starting with Lucy's skull, the size of it is about the same size as a chimpanzee's skull. It had about a brain capacity that could hold about 400 cc's, which is very, very close to what a chimpanzee's brain case can hold. And it's sloped and ape-like, and they didn't find the whole skull. They only found several fragments that they pieced together and imagined the rest using plaster of Paris. But the second thing that they've actually studied scientifically is there's a hole in the bottom of skulls that is called the foramen magnum, and that's where your spine enters into the base of your skull. And they've noticed that Lucy's, after studying more of Lucy's kinds from other australopithecines that they've found, that her spine enters in her skull through the foramen magnum at an angle that would indicate that she walked on all fours, not on two legs.
Wow, that's very interesting. And just coincidentally, about a month ago, we did an interview with the inventor of the MRI, Dr. Raymond Damadian, and we were talking about the top two vertebrae, the atlas and the axis, and how the skull sits on that top vertebrae. And so this follows on nicely, because if an organism is designed to walk on all fours, like be a knuckle walker, you would think that, in fact, the skull might be attached to the spinal column differently. And I've never heard this before, Dan. I'm so thankful you're bringing this up. What is this called, the foramen magnum?
Yeah, the foramen magnum, and that's the hole in the base of our skull where our spine enters into. And Lucy's definitely came in at an angle that's nearly identical to a chimp. Now, they're basing that based on just a few of the skulls that they have, which are really broken badly into pieces. But from what they can infer, that spine entered the base of her skull pretty much the same angle that a chimpanzee's does.
Wow, very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah.
And when you mentioned the sloped skull, you're talking about the face, right? Because chimpanzees, they have more of a sloped face, and that's what Lucy's skull indicates.
You got it, Bob. It's fascinating. You and I can stand upright with our heads perfectly level, look at a wall, and then we can just point our eyes down and we can see the floor. If chimpanzees do that, or if Lucy did that, she'd be staring at her nose.
Right.
Because her jaw protrudes out further than, of course, the eye sockets do. So she was very much designed as a chimp type of ape-like creature that's just gone extinct. So,
because
absolutely.
When you're an upright walker, you often need to be able to see your feet so you don't stumble. If you're walking through a forest, just outdoors anywhere, or in your kid's bedroom for that matter.
Oh, you've got it. I mean, it even gets worse for Lucy, because they've continued the study and they've looked at this thing called the semicircular canals, which is part of our vestibular system in our ears for maintaining balance. Many creatures like apes and chimpanzees and humans have three different semicircular canals that are all responsible for maintaining our balance when we angle our heads at different levels. So like when we nod yes or no, or when we turn from side to side, those three semicircular canals keep us from falling. And they've noticed that two of the semicircular canals, the posterior and the anterior, are statistically significantly different in australopithecines as they were from humans. They're basically nearly identical to a chimpanzee's semicircular canals, indicating that her balance system was also engineered for walking on all fours, not on two legs.
I know that you're not just getting this from creationists, because, Dan, back a couple decades ago, The journal Nature published an article on this. It had a number of co-authors, Spohr and Wood and Zonneveld, and they were explicit about the inner ear structure of Lucy. And it seems like if you're designed to walk upright, then the inner ear would be crucial, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to sustain that kind of posture for long.
You're right. I imagine, Baba, if we took the semicircular canal system from a chimp and loaded it in our own head, we'd be tripping all over ourselves, because mm-hmm. we're simply not designed for that at all. And you're right. Spohr started the work in 1994, and he and his team have continued on and only really verified and solidified the initial position that these creatures were fundamentally designed in a different way than bipedal walkers like humans.
Okay, so we have their small brain, about the third of the size of a modern human being. We have their sloped faces. They can't just naturally look down and see their feet, so they'd easily be tripping over themselves. Then we have the foramen magnum, the base of the skull and how it attaches to the spine, and then the inner ear, the semicircular canals. So this sounds like a scientific argument, not a religious argument.
You know, the 10 fatal flaws that we bring up about Lucy are drawn entirely from scientific journals that are based on the idea of evolution. So we're not pulling from creation literature here to make our points. We're simply pulling from the scientific journals themselves that have all this evidence. And it even includes, I mean, one of our major points here also that we talk about are just some, quite frankly, some embarrassing things that they recently just found a couple of years ago, that one of Lucy's vertebrae actually belongs to an extinct baboon type of creature called a Theropithecus. Mm. So for 40 years, you have hundreds of paleontologists studying Lucy's remains, and it just now dawned on them that, my gosh, this vertebrae doesn't belong with her. So you think, my gosh, if they can study for that long, for four decades, hundreds of people, and just now identify that, you know, a very important piece of her fossil, her vertebrae, doesn't belong to her, it makes you question the whole thing. You know, what are we really looking at here?
Well, with Lucy, even though about 40% of her skeleton was recovered, and by the way, Johansson, who discovered her in Ethiopia, Donald Johansson, she has this fancy name, Australopithecus afarensis. What does that name mean, Dan?
It's interesting. It simply means southern ape, or ape from afar. And
a southern and ape.
That's what she is. She is just simply an extinct ape.
Yes. Johansson wrote a book about the discovery. I read big swaths of that book, not the whole thing, but back decades ago. And it's only 40%, but it's a lot better than Nebraska Man, which had been found in Nebraska. They built up a whole skull from it, a whole jaw, then a skull, then a whole skeleton, and then even his society and the tools that he used. And the whole thing was built based on a single tooth. They found one tooth, and the tooth wasn't even of a so-called hominid, was it?
You're right. In fact, the Nebraska Man carried the lie of human evolution for a full decade. There was a whole cottage industry, if you will, around Nebraska Man. And it turns out it was from a tooth of an extinct pig.
Yeah, it was a pig.
So and we have now a similar thing going on with Lucy with respect to her vertebrae being found that doesn't even belong to her.
It was a baboon. So it is easy, even for scientists, to see what they want to see.
Yes.
And then when you add the motivation that we reject that there's a creator God, we want to find a natural method for the origin of Homo sapiens, then of course they're going to look for what they want to find. So what else in your list of fatal flaws with Lucy being a Homo sapiens ancestor?
Well, you know, there's a lot of dialogue in the scientific literature about Lucy's pelvis. You even have evolutionists saying that it looks like it was reconstructed in a way that exaggerates the slope of certain features to overemphasize a human-like appearance. Mm. But her pelvis and her sacrum were found in a very bad shape. They were crushed into multiple fragments, and then part of it had actually been fossilized together in an anatomically impossible configuration. So they took a buzzsaw to this thing, cut it apart, and glued it back together in the way that they believed it existed. And of course, then they try to amplify certain features and say, well, it proves that she walked upright. But you really can't tell what it is. And that's what the other evolutionary scientists are saying in these journals, is that you really don't have much here to go on. But nonetheless, you've got Johansson's team using this as a trophy to try to parade around that she was bipedal like humans.
Well, when you say that they took a buzzsaw to the fossil to get it to be shaped the way they wanted it to be, like a human being's pelvis, Dan Biddle, once again, you must be making that up, right? Because it can't be true that the most famous human ancestor was just rearranged with power tools.
You know, it's incredible, but when it comes down to it, you have quotes from other evolutionists in leading journals like the American Journal of Physical Anthropology that are saying that her whole sacrum and pelvis structure looks like a chimpanzee's.
Well,
and you've got several quotes. It's not just one. You've got all kinds of people saying this is just does not prove that she's bipedal at all.
Well, the evolutionist Dr. Owen Lovejoy appeared on the program NOVA, put out by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and they had a series called In Search of Human Origins. And the very first episode, I mean, creationists in their seminars, they'll show this video clip and the audience just breaks up into laughter.
Yeah, they even say it was a tricky job putting it back together. But
yeah,
after
you see
it was all done, they say it looks very much like a human's and not at all like a chimpanzee's. But that was after broken bone fragments were put together and then taken back apart again to fix the fossilization issue and then placed back together yet again. So we really don't know what we have with respect to her pelvis.
Right. When you see the power saw going, you hear it. And the sawdust is flying. It's not sawdust, plaster dust. It's just quite a visual to tell you that they reconstructed Lucy's pelvis to make it look rounded like a human being's.
It's amazing. And you know that probably leads us into our next point, that there are a number of peer-reviewed scientific journals out there that are now even questioning her gender. Under articles titled Lucy or Brucey. You know, it can be tricky to tell the sex of fossil ancestors. And another article here that's titled Lucy or Lucifer, Gender Confusion in the Pliocene. So you would think that if we're so sure about this fossil and that she's a early human ancestor and everything, basic things like her gender would rise right to the top and would be indisputable. But now there's even conflict about they can't even decide what gender she is.
Well, in California public schools, I don't think they could decide what gender anyone is.
That's a good point.
So I guess Lucy fits.
I think Romans 1 has a lot to say about what's happening with that issue.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. The New Testament, Epistle to the Romans, chapter 1. So
yes.
How about, we're down to her pelvis, but to back up, how about her hands?
Yes, you know, her hands are actually probably some of the most telling information that we have, because we do have several of her wrist bones and wrist bones from her kind, from what they call Lucy's family, which is another set of australopithecines that they found several different bone fragments from. And a couple of scientists have taken note of her wrist structure and noticed that it can lock into place for knuckle walking just like a chimpanzee's or gorilla's wrist can. When you study it and look at it and do some measurements, there's a concave and convex locking system that's unique to knuckle walkers that's found in Lucy's kind, Lucy herself, and chimpanzees. There's a curvature there that is very, very telling of a knuckle walker. And when you compare that to the wrist bones of humans, we have a completely flat system. It's not locking at all, and that's why if we tried to run around on our all fours and on our knuckles, we'd break our wrists within the first 50 feet. She was clearly designed just like a chimpanzee for knuckle walking, and her wrists tell that, and her fingers are also curved and ape-like, and they've done statistical studies on that, compared her to all kinds of other ape-like creatures, and they're very, very curved and nowhere close to being straight like a human. We're talking about statistical groupings that have been done by scientists that study this stuff for a living, and have determined that, Lucy's kinds, her fingers, are sloped, which are good features for climbing around and living in trees.
When you mentioned two scientists, I'm not trying to quiz you here, but I'm wondering if that might have been Stern and Sussman, because they had their findings published in a scientific peer-reviewed journal, the American Journal of Physical Anthropology, and the argument that her hands were curved, that is, not like human beings' hands, but curved so that she could easily hang from tree limbs. As you're saying, Dan Biddle, these findings are by secular scientists who actually are evolutionists.
Yes, you have Stern and Sussman's report. You have Richman and Straits' report. They both say the same thing. Lucy had a locking wrist system that was necessary for quadrupedal locomotion. And it's very, very obvious when you look at her wrist joint and you compare it to a chimpanzee's, it's virtually identical. These creatures were tree-dwelling creatures just like chimpanzees. So there's been several studies that have proved that both her wrists and her fingers show that she's a tree-dwelling creature.
And when we are using the pronouns she, her, speaking of Lucy, of course, we're talking about the Australopithecus afarensis species. So we're not just talking about the bones that may have belonged to this one creature, but to all of those that have been found in the decades since 1974. And I think I might have misspoke when I said, well, you're going from the skull down to her feet, but we skipped the hands. In a way, you didn't, because you were up to the pelvis. And Lucy, like chimps do, she has long arms and short legs. So really, the hands will be hanging down there just below her pelvis.
Yes, you've got it. And then if you continue on down her body and go lower, there's been a lot of journal articles published about her legs and the physics that just don't work there for walking. They're just coming out and saying Lucy's little legs were too short for walking. Some scientists believe that she walked with a bent hip, bent knee type of locomotion. Other people say that she's bipedal, and other scientists would argue that she's walking around on all fours. But you would think if it was that clear, there wouldn't be this much controversy among evolutionary scientists that say, look, we really can't figure out how she walked, but her legs were definitely too short for walking. And that's what some of these scientific journals have come out and said. But you know, Bob, another important point that you were bringing up is that we were referring to Lucy as the one fossil. But they have discovered, let's say, about 20 individual fossils, and they refer to them as Australopithecines or Australopithecus afarensis. The amazing thing that I'm finding when we start learning about how this species is represented in the school textbooks and on videos, there's an amazing BBC video with Donald Johanson himself as a narrator, where they show on the screen an entire army of these Australopithecines marching across the landscape. There's hundreds of complete fossils. So it looks to the viewer that there's an enormous army of these things. And he goes on and says, you know, we have now have 400 specimens. But what they're not telling you is that what they mean by 400 specimens is not what they're representing on the screen with respect to an army of hundreds of these creatures in the landscape. They mean 400 bone fragments. So a study was done less than 10 years ago about the entire collection of Lucy's kind, and they're now up to just almost 400 bone fragments. And over 30% of the entire collection of this 400 specimen that they talk about, the 400 specimens, are teeth. So you think, how hard are evolutionists trying to represent that Lucy's kind is our early ancestors when they show a whole army of hundreds of these things walking across a landscape that are full, complete, standing upright skeletons? But when you dig into the literature, you find out, oh, they're talking about 400 specimens, meaning bone chips and fragments and teeth, not 400 complete fossils.
In fact, if you take all of the alleged ancestors, Homo erectus, Homo habilis, and so on, you could fit all the bones found in the bed of a pickup truck.
And even smaller, I mean, Homo habilis is the same thing. You could put all the Homo habilis fossils inside of a shoebox and still have room for shoes.
Oh, wow.
So when you look at this, and if we were to survey a sixth grader after being subjected to this teaching for 2 weeks, and you were to go interview these school kids and say, well, how many of Lucy's kind do you think they found? And how many handymans or Homo habilis do you think that they found? These kids probably have in their minds that there's an entire collection, that these things are coming out of the groundwork left and right in Ethiopia. But when you start turning over the literature and looking into this yourself, the entire thing is based upon a very scant collection of extinct apes in most cases, and in some cases, a mixture of human and ape bones, and in some cases, human bones that are mistakenly identified or classified as ape-like.
And the evolutionists have long done that. For example, when they find Neanderthal bones, they, especially originally, would draw him like a beast. I mean, like a scary ape-looking creature. But when they find Lucy's bones, they draw her and paint her and make models of her where she looks human. They even give her the whites of the eyes, like we human beings. We have the whites around our pupils. Well, apes have brown eyeballs.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you go to a zoo, 100% of the apes, chimps, gibbons that you look at, they will all have brown eyes. None of them have whites of the eyes like humans do. And that's, of course, I think God gave us the whites of the eyes for a richer experience of communication, whereas apes, they don't need that, and they just have all brown eyes. Mm-hmm. But we have yet to find a Lucy reproduction in a museum that doesn't have eye whites.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is,
and
so interesting.
Typically standing upright and
pondering
like a human, and it looks like she's in deep thought, and she's got her hand on her chin. It looks like she's thinking about high school physics or something, rather than going around foraging for food like she probably did.
Yeah, the Pythagorean theorem. She was just about to come up with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when these evolutionary scientists, Stern and Sussman, they say that Lucy, her kind, their toe bones were long and curved. They were curved even by ape standards. So to be an upright walker and have curved toe bones, curved even compared to other apes, and then the wrists that lock in place and the sloped forehead, and on and on and on. There is so much evidence from anatomy, from the fossil record, comparing that to chimps and apes versus humans, that scream out that Lucy was a little ape, a little chimp-like creature that stood about 3.5 feet tall.
You're exactly right, Bob. I mean, we could stop counting about after maybe 15 things in her anatomy that clearly point out that she is not a human ancestor at all, but that she fits more within the family of chimpanzees. It makes good sense. In fact, she has a lot of similarities with bonobos. When we go out and speak to youth groups, we'll bring a bonobo skull and a reproduction of Lucy's skull, and the kids can hardly tell them apart because they're very, very similar in size, slope, shape, and things like that. And besides, they only have one skull that isn't completely smashed all together. They have fewer than half a dozen skulls, and the ones that they have, some of them are pieced together from hundreds of broken fragments and pieces. So you got to imagine, how badly do people want to hang their hat on this idea, and the extent that they go through and the steps that are made to overemphasize these features to try to make her look human-like. It's really amazing.
So this fossil was discovered in 1974, the first. Some of the research that you've been talking about has been published in the 80s and the 90s. The journal Nature in 2000, that's when we learned that she had the locking wrists. But you keep coming forward right up to this very year, the year 2016, and researchers have now suggested another stunning detail about Lucy, and that is the way she died.
Yes. You know, Bob, that is one of the most amazing things. In fact, I was putting together the Lucy presentation, and it had been a long, long day. I'd put together a lot of research, and I came home, and my wife said, "Have you seen CNN?" And I said, "No, what?" She says, "Lucy's on CNN." This is just a few weeks ago. So I said, "My gosh, what is it?" Looked it up. And they had just released a press release and some interviews about a massive study that was just completed on Lucy with a bunch of scientists. They had geologists, paleontologists, several other people from the University of Texas that had just finished a study where they completed 35,000 CT scans on all of Lucy's remains.
Wow.
And then they showed a lot of her breaks and fractures to a team of orthopedic surgeons who came to the conclusion, based upon the way that Lucy's bones broke with what they call green stick fractures, which is how a green stick might break if you were to pull it together from a straight line to like a U. Mm. And they've looked at her wrist, her arm bones, her legs, her pelvis, and they came to basically two conclusions. Number one, she died from falling out of a tree, going about 35 miles an hour, 40 feet high. And the second thing that they've learned is that they believe she was conscious when she hit the ground. And they look at that because she apparently tried to brace herself from the fall based upon the fractures in her wrist and other parts of her body. But
wow.
There are eight sets of fractures that these experts looked at, and they conclusively determine that Lucy Johansson's upright walking bipedal ape died from falling out of a tree. It's so ironic.
That's just the perfect way to conclude the interview, Dan Biddle. It's so encouraging to learn from science the confirmation of the truth in Genesis, because the Bible tells us that God created land-dwelling creatures on day six, and that would include apes and chimpanzees and so on. And that was the same day that he made then human beings, Adam and Eve, just earlier that day. So that we have coexisted with chimps from the day of our creation. And try as they might, secularist, Darwinist, theistic evolutionist, they simply can't find a good argument for human beings evolving from some ape-like creature.
You've got it. And I think that's why we put monkeys in the zoo, not the other way around.
What a great point. So, Dan, could you tell us, as we're closing, something about Genesis Apologetics, how it came to be, how you ended up founding this organization?
Yes, well, I'm a behavioral scientist by training, and I've spent a lot of my career going around in state and federal court cases and testifying about research statistics and testing. And so I've been able to take some of those skills and apply them towards the field of apologetics to try to develop very compelling cases that are evidence driven for the persuasive purposes of showing people that God's word is true. And we came out about 4 years ago and formed this ministry. It's all volunteer based. We have about five speakers that cover Northern California. We do a lot of work on the weekends and evenings and training people. But our main push right now is the Debunk Evolution series. And it's a video series that has 12 different short videos that are between about 5 and 15 minutes long that junior hires and high schoolers can watch. And it takes each of the main pillars of evolution teaching that are taught in public school and debunks them one at a time at the same time while promoting biblical creationism.
Wow.
So it's good stuff. And if people are interested more about the Lucy presentation that we have, they can go to our website. Just go to genesisapologetics.com/Lucy, and they can actually download our entire Lucy presentation. It's still in the works. It should be done. It's going to be about a 90-minute presentation. It's an exhaustive rebuttal of Lucy that includes all the points we discussed today and a few more.
Yes, and the video series at debunkevolution.com, it is Lesson 3A that deals with did humans evolve, and that addresses Lucy. So that's a very easy and enjoyable watch. It's about 11 minutes long. So, Dan, if you talk to Pat Roy anytime soon, please tell him that we said hello, Bob Benyart and Fred Williams from Real Science Radio. And what a joy and an honor to have you on. Thank you so much, Dan.
Excellent. Biddle. Thanks for having me on. I'll look forward to next time.
You're very welcome. So that was Dr. Dan Biddle. And the organization is Genesis Apologetics. They're focusing on the California public schools. What a fabulous effort to be focused in that way. And then, of course, when they put those tools online, they apply to kids all over the country, indeed throughout the English-speaking world. So this is Bob Benyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.